In the matter of the Borough of Seaside Park versus Sri Jati LLC, may we please have appearances of counsel?
Peter H. by Dean of Patrick, where they vote during on behalf of the property owners of Sri Jati.
Mr. Wegener, please.
Good morning. I just wanted to point out that I do have to keep my cell phone on in order to, I have a little, for my hearing aids.
Perfectly all right. I'm
connected. I hope nothing happens and it interrupt us, but may it please the court, if I may. This case, there's two perceptions. This involves the motel in Seaside Park and the efforts to acquire the property by eminent domain by Seaside Park and our challenge to that. I'm sure you've read the briefs. And let me just say that there are two perceptions of this property outstanding. And it kind of is involved in the landscape that we're looking at here. Initially, you have on the one side, you have a letter from Dr. Kanya, who points out that he was the proud owner of a 51-unit oceanfront motel for over 15 years. Then he worked there through COVID and Sandy. He made investments in the property. And that property is a family-friendly, affordable hotel. That's a place for first-time thousands of first-time visitors to the Jersey Shore, and that's his operation there is consistent with the state policy, making the Jersey Shore available to all people in the public. There are criticisms of that, even though there are no more private beaches in New Jersey, all are public beaches, that there's a scarcity of space places where there's bathroom facilities, changing facilities, and so forth, and the motel serves that purpose. On the other hand, you have the perception that goes back to in 2021, the town referred this property to the planning board for recommendation regarding redevelopment, and there's a report in the appendix about the redevelopment investigation and that hearing that said there were 61 violations of zoning and 853 police calls over a five-year period, covering things as drug overdoses, deaths, suicide attempts, fights, civil disorder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there, those perceptions are there. I might say that in a quick description of the site, if any of you are, I'm assuming no one's familiar with Seaside Park, but it is a seashore community, the southern tip of Island Beach. And it's a town that's unique in the sense that at the northern end of the town, on the oceanfront, Ocean Boulevard, there is a boardwalk that extends from Seaside Heights down into Seaside Park, and commercial. And there's a bar, the Sawmill, up there. And as you go south, the subject property is a motel that's there. To the south of our motel is all single family. There's this one exception, there's a small motel, I think a couple blocks down, but essentially single family residential homes of multi-million dollar value. Some of the homes would rival what you'd find in Bayhead or Maniloki, and the town has gentrified to a certain extent from the south to the north. The motel is now no longer a permitted use. It's the residential zone. And in their appraisal, the highest and best use of the property is for single family residential development. And I point that out because I think it's important that we understand
Council?
What's involved here.
Council?
Now, the ordinance...
Council? Can we focus on the legal issue?
Yes.
Brings us here. Let me ask a question, if I might.
Yes.
Your cert petition says that the issue is whether the statute requires that an enabling ordinance must set forth the public use for which property is being acquired.
Correct.
Have you raised a constitutional claim in either the trial or the appellate courts?
Did we? Yes, we absolutely.
A constitutional claim as opposed to a statutory one. What does the statute say? I don't recall reading a constitutional claim. Am I correct about that?
We argued that the when we talked about the ordinance, we talked about the power of eminent domain and how the Constitution limits the taking to public use.
For sure.
And requires just compensation.
But the legal
issue.
That's
a constitutional requirement.
But the legal issue that you've raised is, does this statute require that the public use be set forth in the ordinance?
Yes.
Whether that, and your language was, is that the legislative intent?
Well, it's the Constitution. The statute is informed. To go back to the ordinance.
I don't see in your question that you're attacking the constitutionality of the statute. Are you doing so?
Did you do so
in front of the appellate division?
The whole implicit in our argument is that it's required by the statute. Yes. The statute is informed by the Constitution and the case law, which determines why is a public use required? Because the Constitution limits the power of the municipality to take property.
So let me
unless it satisfies a prior public use.
Let me ask it this way.
That's a constitutional provision.
You're suggesting there's an implicit constitutional argument. There's no express constitutional challenge to this statute, not in the trial court, not in the appellate division ruling, and I don't see it in your petition for certification. Am I mistaken? No express challenge on a constitutional basis.
To the ordinance. The challenge is to the ordinance, not to the statute.
All right. Have you ever challenged the proposed public use in this case?
The proposed public use in this case, we did not argue that under certain circumstances, you get to the question of what use are we talking about when you say is a proposed public use? Is it a proposed use? Is it an argument? The ordinance does not specify any particular use.
So how do you respond?
So how do you?
If I could, so there's no direct challenge to the public use for the reason you just said. How do you respond to the notion that this is no more than a theoretical challenge, an advisory opinion of sorts, because there's no direct constitutional challenge and there's no challenge to the public use here? Is this case asking for an advisory opinion about when the public use should be stated? In light of those two facts?
There is no public. How can I argue or how could any court make a ruling? Now you have a complaint filed The complaint says, and it doesn't specify, it says it could be used for a parking lot or any other public use. And it's clear that both the trial judge and the appellate division opinion take the interpretation of that ordinance is that it can use it for any public purpose. That language does not limit it in any way to the use as a parking lot. And that's determined by the trial judge and the appellate division. And I think it's the position of every party in the case, including the amicus. So there's no argument as to whether the ordinance provides for a public use. It does not. It just says there would be in furtherance of a public use.
Let me ask.
It doesn't say what there is one. So how can we challenge the use on the grounds that, well, it's not a public use? You can't say that because there's no use specified. It can be anything whatsoever. That's why we say the ordinance is inappropriate, because it doesn't spell out a public use, and the court cannot, we're appealing from the court order, which determined that they exercised their right of eminent domain. They properly exercised it, their power of eminent domain in that judgment, and that judgment that can't be, because no court had an opportunity to look at the proposed use and decide if it's a public use or not.
Why don't you tell us where you think the appellate division got it wrong?
Where they got it wrong, the ordinance has to specify a specific use.
Under what authority? Under the statute?
Well, respectfully, you have to look at the overall statutory scheme. All right, look at the overall statutory scheme. We referred to in our petition's reply brief, we spelled out the statute, the local buildings and land law, 4015-12A. Section Part A says that the county or a municipality may provide for the acquisition of any real property, all right? And the subsection includes by condemnation. And then, so that's a provision. I agree, there's no language in there that says it has to be a prior public use, it has to be a public use. But the legislature and provision of the statute is informed by the Constitution. Remember, you have the eminent domain statute, which says that whenever a condemnor determines to acquire property by the eminent domain pursuant to law, the phrase pursuant to law is informed by not just the building and land law, but the Constitution of the United States and the case law affording the constitutional protections for that. And now when you go to what's now section C of the ordinance, of the statute, it says a municipality having acquired any real property, which acquisition or estate shall have become unsuited or inconvenient for the use for which it was acquired, may at any time convert a portion to any other public use. So the intention of the statute is to regulate the acquisition, the change of use, and disposition of property.
Council section.
Well, if you let's see
section C, which you just read for us, says if it becomes unsuited or inconvenient.
Yes.
For the use it was acquired, meaning after it was acquired, you can switch the use. Does that tell us precisely when the legislature directed public use needed to be stated?
Well, it clearly means after, it's when it says the use for which it was acquired, mean that sometime it was acquired sometime prior to the determination to change it.
So you would have had case law you would have under had this. You would have had a complaint before the property had been acquired. Is that fair to say?
Well, the section only deals with property that as having been acquired.
Correct.
So it's having been acquired. So there's something clear implication is that it was acquired for a specific public use.
Are there and multiple,
it can be changed.
Are there multiple spots along the way before it was acquired where the statement of the public use could have been made? My point is, I'm not sure that this tells us that it was the ordinance and only at the time of the ordinance that you had to say it.
Well, it doesn't, I agree, but the assumption is that it was when it's been, having been acquired by real property, that it was lawfully acquired one way or another under, presumably under Section A, but it could have been there from the early 1500s or maybe, I don't know, but it has to be legally, is it the assumption is that it's legally acquired.
Would you agree that after an ordinance is passed, there are multiple steps that occur before the property is actually acquired for the public use?
Correct.
So I think what the Chief Justice was asking, subsection C seems to indicate that at any time that property having already been acquired could be converted to another public use. So after a property has already been, after an ordinance, there are a lot of other steps that happen during which the purpose of the public use could be indicated by the borough, correct?
From the time they acquired the property, that there may be situations where the property becomes unsuited or inconvenient. That's
right, but the issue that we're discussing here is whether the public use, the intended public use, has to be stated in the ordinance as opposed to just general public use. So we're trying to understand your argument that subsection C is an indicator that the legislature intended that the ordinance specifically specify the intended public use, whereas there are many, well, I'm still speaking, there are many steps along the way prior to acquisition of the property where that intended public use could be explicitly provided.
This is after the C takes place after the property is acquired. All the steps to take the acquisition have been occurred.
Right, and your argument is that one of those steps, the ordinance, requires the borough to explicitly state what the intended public use is, correct?
Absolutely.
So we're asking, why is it that subsection C is one of the indicators that the ordinance and not any of the other steps prior to acquisition must explicitly state the intended public use?
When it uses the language for the use for which it was acquired, that assumes that there was a definition of a use for which it was acquired. Assumes a prior use was determined.
Is there any
under A, that would have to be by ordinance, and the implication is that the ordinance would have to set forth the use.
I understand your argument is, by implication, this is what the statute should be read to say.
Yes.
Can you answer this question? Is there anywhere in the statute where the legislature explicitly says, this is when you must provide information about the public use? You must state the public use.
No, the language in this statute doesn't say that, but under the Eminent Domain Act, the prayer for relief that you're looking for when you operate under the Eminent Domain Act, where the assumption is that they properly exercise their power of eminent domain pursuant to law, all right? When you reach that point where we're now in front of the court on a challenge to the taking, all right? It's the court cannot possibly make a determination as to whether the use is a legitimate public use if there's no use set forth in the ordinance in the first place. How can I argue, say, oh, Mr. Wagner, you didn't argue that a parking lot wasn't a public use. A parking lot may be a public use under certain circumstances, or a parking lot may not be. And we would be entitled to challenge that under the reasonable necessities of the case, going back to Wildlife Preserve or Texas Eastern Transmission versus Wildlife Preserve in 1966, the Jersey Supreme Court ruling. I wrote the bench memo in that case, so I cite it every chance I get. But anyway, we would have to, the property owner would have the right to challenge whether the use set forth in the ordinance constitutes a public use.
Didn't you have a
this
right to?
This ordinance doesn't have a use.
Didn't you have a right to challenge the use, the intended use, at the complaint stage?
Well, how do you challenge a use that's not there?
Didn't the borough explicitly state what the use was at that point?
Well, we argued to Judge Ford that there's no use set forth in the ordinance. She agreed that there was no use set forth in the ordinance, but said that doesn't matter. There's a case out there. She didn't mention that the case involved a circumstance where 20 years after the property was acquired, they decided to, and it was involved a subdivision and covenants to limit it to single family use. That 20 years later, they allowed a change of use to a parking lot for a public library. All right, that's a very different circumstance than saying, we're adopting this ordinance as you can take the property, but we're not going to tell you what the use is.
Council, regardless of the ordinance, in New Jersey, no municipality can take public land, can take any form of land pursuant to eminent domain without an action first pursuant to the Eminent Domain Act, right?
Correct.
Okay. So why is it not sufficient that once an Eminent Domain Act action is filed and the municipality sets forth the public use for which it seeks to take the property owner can challenge at that point and say that is not a public use?
All right. Let me say that did not take place in this case.
I'm just asking.
Okay.
In a hypothetical case.
Hypothetically.
File an eminent domain action.
Right.
They say, here is the public use for which we seek to take.
Okay, that's an interesting, thank you. That's a very interesting question. What would be the case if they said, or if the mayor says, we decided to take this property for a parking lot?
Not the mayor. I'm not talking about the specific facts of this case. Okay. I'm just saying here it was actually the borough that filed the action, not the mayor. So regardless of who we're arguing about said it or didn't say it in this case, I'm just asking the municipality itself in the context of an eminent domain action sets forth what it sees as the public use for which it intends to take the property. Why can the property owner not then challenge that public use and say, listen, this is not a public use, here's all the reasons why,
okay,
within the context of the eminent domain action?
Challenge the ordinance on the basis.
No, not the ordinance. I'm saying it was never in the ordinance. However, in New Jersey, you can't take any property unless the municipality files pursuant to the Eminent Domain Act. So let's say after they file pursuant to the Eminent Domain Act, they set forth, this is the public use for which we seek to take this property. It is very clear. Then the property owner, why is it not sufficient for the property owner at that point to be able to say, this is not a public use, here's all the reasons why, and therefore this property should not be taken? Why is that not sufficient?
Because the building and land ordinance statute requires that in order for the municipality to determine to acquire the property in the first place, it must do so by ordinance. And the ordinance, all right, my position in that hypothetical case would be that the ordinance that decision has to be made by ordinance, so with a public hearing with the people, the borough council people responsible to the public, and responsible for political accountability for the votes, the things that they do in adopting the ordinance.
But in theory, if the borough council brings the action, then they are also accountable politically. Because if in the context of the action, the borough council sets forth what you or what residents in that municipality think is not a proper public use, then they can vote the borough council people out of office. The action itself is brought on behalf of the borough council. So why is there no political account, or why couldn't there be political accountability if the borough council is setting something forth in the context of the eminent domain action rather than in the context of the ordinance?
The eminent domain act says you can only you could only proceed if that was adopted pursuant to law. The phrase pursuant to law, I believe, incorporates the Municipal Building and Land Act under Section A, right? Under Section A, that has the implication that it must be a public use in order to be constitutionally valid. So that's the answer to the question would be—
I understand your position.
Be under the statute, and that's the— eminent domain statute, section 6, 20:3-6, and interrelated with the Building and Lands Act.
In this case,
both of those.
In this case, if I understand it correctly, the second amended complaint stated the public purpose here, including but not limited to a public parking lot, together with electric vehicle charging infrastructure. You had the opportunity to challenge that. My question is, was your client— tell us how your client was harmed by having the public purpose stated in the complaint as opposed to in the ordinance?
Respectfully, Justice, it did not set forth what the use was to be in the complaint. The language of the complaint has been interpreted by both the trial judge and the appellate division opinion and all the parties to this case as meaning that they are not limited to use as a parking lot. It can be any use that— I think the phrase the trial judge used was any change in their development plans. Well, any change in their development means change their mind. What they did, they clearly took the property now and they're going to decide later. Footnote in the appellate division opinion, where we moved to expand the record to go to this board meetings, town meetings, 2 years afterwards. They're still discussing. And the township attorney, the mayor said, well, we can't really talk about the uses of that property. People are asking, what are you going to use the property for? Obviously, they want it to be a single family residential zoned and put that back on the tax rolls as high dollar houses. But they asked that question and the mayor says, well, there's a lot of uses we're going to use for that property, but we can't discuss them. The township attorney says, well, there are other uses we're going to talk about for that property, and then there's under discussion right now. So under discussion right now, that is 2 years later, they're talking about what the use is going to be for the property. They talk about, well, we made an application for a grant for electric charging stations. That application in the appendix, if you look at it, doesn't specify any property. And we understand that was in the specific application, which we don't have, it's not in the record, but there's other property that was rejected because it was in a flood zone, the similar zone that the property's in. But they clearly, and then they come up and say, oh no, we decide we, now we need a public well. And the appellate division says, oh, that's just the kind of flexibility we need. We don't have to spell out what the use is in the ordinance or in the complaint, because they didn't spell it out in either one. They said, we don't have to spell it out. things may pop up, things may change. They can, well, if things, the statute, that argument may work with regard to some other circumstances in another statute. But this statute makes it clear that if there's a legitimate reason to change the use of the property under subsection C, you can do that rather easily with just a resolution. So there's no argument there. And I might say that this also, if the court were to adopt the interpretation of the appellate division and uphold the taking where there is no determination as to what the use of the property will be, there's no reason whatsoever for any ordinance to ever spell out the use. And if they decide to change it, or if they decide to sell it, they could sell this property under subsection D, right? So, subsection D of the ordinance, they could sell it to a developer or to build single family houses. And that's clearly a violation. You can't condemn property from one person and then sell it, give it to another one so that they can do something with it for their personal benefit. That's clearly a no-no. And that's, you're going to argue that more extensively in Getzel B, I think. But that's under the way this is now, neither the complaint nor the ordinance makes a determination as to what the use is going to be. So therefore, they can sell it to a private person. They don't have to follow the statutory scheme. The statutory scheme is designed to protect the property owner and all of the property rights that are involved, and it requires that there be an ordinance, a legislative determination by the governing body that they had adopted pursuant to law, including constitutional law, which means it has to satisfy the determination of a prior public use. And that's, I think that's, you know, they talk about property rights. I want to make it clear. I know that from time to time, this court may have different views on the extent of property rights. Property doesn't have rights. Property has no rights. People have rights in property. The right to the pursuit of happiness is tied up in being able to keep the fruits of your labor and property rights. And they're important. If you look, and the United States Supreme Court, as late as 2023, in Chief Justice Roberts' opinion in Cedar Point versus Hasid, makes it very clear that New Jersey is part of the United States of America, and our constitutional protections are coterminous with those of the federal courts, and this court has said so many times. Unless there are any, I guess that's it. Unless anyone has any further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
All right, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be before this court at least one last time.
Thank you. Ms. LeBoux.
May it please the court. This case presents a rather straightforward question of statutory construction. Whether the local land and buildings law requires a condemning municipality to recite the public purpose of a taking within the four corners of the authorizing ordinance. It does not. Neither the text of the statute nor any decision of this court or any other court in the state of New Jersey imposes such a requirement. And this court should decline appellant's invitation to engraft one onto the law. The borough of Seaside Park lawfully exercised its eminent domain authority to acquire property for a public infrastructure purpose. The authorizing ordinance was adopted in full compliance with the local land and buildings law. The public purpose underlying the acquisition was not hidden or obscure. It was set forth plainly in the condemnation complaint and attendant filings, giving appellant full notice of the basis for the taking and a complete opportunity to be heard. Appellant does not, because it cannot, point to any statutory provision mandating that a public purpose be stated within the ordinance itself. The legislature, in enacting the local land and buildings law, established the procedural framework for municipal condemnation. That framework does not include the formalistic pleading requirement that appellant now urges. Where the legislature has not spoken, it is not the role of the courts to impose new substantive conditions on the exercise of a power expressly granted to municipalities. The appellate division correctly upheld the ordinance and found no statutory infirmity. That decision is well grounded in the law and should be affirmed. To rule otherwise would be to impose a new and unsupported procedural burden on municipalities throughout New Jersey, one that serves no constitutional imperative, finds no support in legislative text, and would cast doubt on condemnation proceedings conducted in good faith reliance on the law. The respondent, Borough of Seaside Park, respectfully urges this court to uphold the appellate division holding. That's the end of my preliminary statement. Do you have any?
Why don't we pause for 2 minutes? If public use is not stated in the ordinance, at what point must the town state it? The Constitution requires that private property only be taken for public use. At what point does the owner need to know what that public use is so that they can fully avail themselves of the constitutional protections they have?
I would say with the filing of the complaint, the local land and buildings law requires that property be taken for a public purpose. The ordinance isn't actually the acquisition. The ordinance is the beginning, the authorization to acquire. So then an appraisal is conducted on behalf of the municipality. An ordinance is adopted. The borough tries to negotiate the fair market value of the property with the property owner. Acquisition doesn't happen until after the complaint is filed. The condemnation complaint is filed in order to show cause to say, you know, does the borough have the authority to take the property for this purpose? And the acquisition doesn't happen until after the commissioners have been appointed and an order authorizing that to happen occurs. The money is then deposited with the court and the declaration of taking is filed, and that's when the acquisition occurs.
So prior to the complaint being filed, there must be bona fide negotiations. So is it often the case that the intended public use is communicated to the private property owner during the bona fide negotiations? Because it seems that that would be an important point for the private property owner to understand what the intended use is in negotiating to sell the property.
Yes, that frequently occurs. And the borough spent months attempting to negotiate. I think it's in the record, months attempting to negotiate with the property owner.
But there's no requirement in the statute that the public use be set forth during the negotiations, correct?
That's correct.
What's the impact of an appraisal that is done at the early stages before notice is given? Does that have any after effects?
The appraisal is just for the highest and best use of the property. So the appraisal is not necessarily for the public use at the property. If we were to appraise it as what the borough intended to use the property for, I'm sure it would be lower than what it was appraised for at the highest and best use of the property.
Are there any consequences for the property owner if they don't get involved before the public use is stated? And specifically, I was focused on the appraisal that is done. Are there consequences for their not having participated in an appraisal for a taking that had no public purpose stated?
I don't believe there are any consequences because, as I stated, the appraisal doesn't take into account the use of the property, just the fair market value of the property. While it would negate having to have all of the proceedings and with the court and have the money put into the court and then further engage with, we have commissioners' hearings and then you have to file a motion to get, it would be a quicker process if the property owner would negotiate. However, they don't, as I think the appellant set forth in their papers, they said, well, we would have had to discuss the necessity for the, you know, or whether this was the right property for the borough, but that's not really the condemnee's place.
And what constraints are on the municipality at the time that they file, that the municipality files its complaint? Can the municipality say, here are 10 possible public uses, everything from a park to a parking lot, and here are some of the possible public uses, but we're not limiting it. This is including but not limited to. We're not limiting ourselves to those. We can change it later pursuant to subsection C. or does the municipality have an obligation to come to a decision, preliminarily at least, as to what the public use is going to be and then identify it to the property owner?
I think they have an obligation to come to a decision, and that's what the borough did. They said, we need this property. We're acquiring this property for a parking purpose with EV infrastructure. They included, but not limited to, language is a recognition that in the future, that may change. But at the time of the taking in 2022, the borough was seeking to put in a parking lot with electronic vehicle charging because there was none.
When did they come to that decision? Did they come to that decision in April when the ordinance was drafted? Or did they come to that decision in July when they first filed the complaint? Or did they come to that decision in September when they filed the second amended complaint? When did Seaside Park know that it wanted to take this property for an electric vehicle charging station and a parking lot?
They knew before April.
Then why didn't they put it in the ordinance?
I'm not exactly sure why they didn't put it in the ordinance, but I know it was not at that time the ordinance was reviewed, the statute was reviewed, and it was said it's not a requirement that you put the specific purpose.
What evidence is there in the record that by April they knew that its public purpose was the same public purpose that was stated in the second amended complaint?
I don't know that there's any evidence in this record before the court.
So how does anybody know when they knew?
Based on the record, they don't know, but they're also not required to state that at the time.
But are they required to know? Are they required to have a public purpose when they initiate the process via ordinance?
Yes.
So they're required to have a public purpose, but they're not required to memorialize that anywhere.
They're required to memorialize it at some point. And that's in the acquisition. So the complaint that authorizes the taking, the acquisition of the property.
If they're required to have a public purpose in April, how can anybody test whether they had a public purpose in April if it's not memorialized anywhere?
There could have been discussions with the property owner. There could have been OPRA requests. There are documents out there evidencing what the borough's intent was, but none of that, we never heard anything from the condemnee until after we had filed the complaint.
Because the private property owner did not respond to any of the communications from the borough, and therefore bona fide negotiations did not commence, at which point the property owner could have just asked.
That's correct.
What is the intended public use? But there were no communications whatsoever until after the complaint was filed.
Correct.
Just to follow up on Justice Pierre-Louis' question, does the owner have the right to know as of the beginning of the negotiations what the public use is going to be?
Yes, it's an open process. The property owner could have responded and asked what the...
Bit different question is, let's say there is a response from a property owner, and let's say there are negotiations that are at their inception, and the owner says, what is it you plan to use our property for? Does the municipality have an obligation to articulate the public use at that time?
There's no statutory obligation, but I would say in order to turn square corners, the municipality would say, yes, we intend to use this for public parking.
Thank you, sir.
For those standing, please have seats. The front row is fine. Justice Nguyen.
Given the applicability of subsection C and the ability to change what the public use is when it's inconvenient, is there any harm to the borough at announcing the public use at the earliest possible opportunity?
No, I don't think there's any harm to that at all.
You said they're required to have a public purpose at the time of the ordinance, but not to put it in the ordinance. What's the basis for the requirement that they have in mind a public purpose at the time of the ordinance?
Just under the eminent domain law, and under the local land and buildings law, all set forth that there has to be a public use for the property.
So doesn't that cut against your argument? If you're conceding that they must have this purpose, why not disclose it? Why not be required to disclose it when you're entering into an ordinance?
There's just no requirement to do so.
So if a municipality just started the process with no public purpose in mind, just that property is valuable we can use it for something, but we're not going to decide on it yet. And it started the steps, the ordinance, followed by the communications for negotiations, and then on through the steps of the statute. Have they done something inconsistent with the eminent domain law? See what I'm saying? We'll decide later, condemn now, decide later.
I don't think they've done anything inconsistent with the eminent domain law. And the facts of this matter, in the intervening years between when the borough decided to take this property and where we are now, a new emergent public need has arisen in the borough of Seaside Park. So while originally it was taken just for parking with EV infrastructure, and the borough was applying for funding, and there's been records provided that the borough was applying for funding for this, the DEP said you need a new drinking water well. And the drinking water well has to be a certain number of feet away from other uses, and this property is ideal and in a good location for that. So the purpose, and if that had happened in between the ordinance and the filing of the complaint, and if the ordinance had said for parking and then the complaint said for parking in a well, would that have invalidated the ordinance? I don't believe so.
So go back in time to the timing of the first ordinance. Is it your understanding of the overall provisions that relate to eminent domain that the town is obligated, required to have a public purpose in mind at the time it issues an ordinance, but it can keep that information to itself and not reveal it publicly?
Yes, I believe they can do that until that they acquire the property.
Why does that make sense?
I don't think there was any intent to keep it secret. There was no malintent on behalf of the borough. The borough said they've been trying to get this property. They adopt an ordinance. They attempt to engage in negotiations. Just because the ordinance does not specifically set forth parking does not mean that it's invalid.
In your experience, does the ordinance usually set forth the public purpose?
I've seen both ways.
Okay.
Let me go back to the chief's question for a second, because you mentioned that turning square corners was a boundary or a limitation on this. If you are required to have a public purpose at the time of the ordinance, but you choose not to reveal that public purpose, how is that being forthright?
I don't think it's a choice not to reveal it.
Okay.
I think that the ordinance complied with the statute.
I'm not asking if it complied. Missing, we know you said before there's an obligation to turn square corners in this instance. If you have a public purpose in April, you haven't revealed the public purpose in April. How is that being forthright?
The public purpose was in other documents that were before the borough.
But none of those are in the record, right? So it's hard to understand how the borough is acting with compunction or integrity when it must have a public purpose, but chooses not to reveal the public.
Are you saying that the borough did reveal the public purpose? You just didn't enter those documents into the record because the borough complied with the statute?
There are documents in the record concerning the borough's application for funding for the parking.
When?
I'm not exactly sure when they were. But
for funding generally or for funding for parking in this particular space?
For EV parking in the borough.
So that doesn't...
Did the borough, during the council meetings, in advance of the ordinance being passed, was there discussion on the record at these public open meetings about what the purpose would be?
Yes.
Okay. So anyone who was interested in knowing what the public purpose was for this particular piece of private property that the borough was seeking to take by eminent domain would have heard that at borough meetings prior to the ordinance being passed.
Correct.
You mentioned
wasn't sure I understood that. So the borough did state on the record, it's just not entered into the record in this case, but the borough did state on the record before passing the ordinance that the purpose was parking with EV infrastructure.
The borough discussed this specific property and parking for EV.
Say it again,
I didn't hear you, sorry.
They discussed use of this property for parking.
Before the ordinance or on the same day as the ordinance.
I believe it was on the same day as the
ordinance. There's a difference, would you agree, between having a discussion about something and deciding this is what you're going to do. You've used the word they discussed that it would be for parking. What does that mean?
That the intent was to use this property for parking.
Did they actually make a finding?
It was not in the ordinance.
At at some point in their discussions, did they reach a conclusion, have a vote, make a determination of one sort or another, this is going to be for parking?
I don't know that they if they had a vote, it would have been in a resolution or other kind of documents.
You mentioned earlier that you've seen it done both ways, both yes, including the public purpose in the ordinance and not. Can you tell us what's common practice?
To include a specific purpose, I would say occurs more often than not, but I have seen ordinances that do not.
Would you say it dilutes the importance of the public use element if it can be sort of suggested but not committed to until after condemnation happens or as part of the acquiring process?
It was committed to with the acquisition document, with the complaint. That's when the borough said this is being used, this will be condemned for parking purposes in the complaint.
But that's 2 years after the investigation begins, right? About a year and a half at least after the investigation and negotiations, and there's a lot that happens leading up to that complaint being filed.
There were attempted negotiations that the property owner did not participate in and could have been revealed during that process.
You say the complaint, but you mean the second amended complaint, right? There was first a complaint, then there was an amended complaint, and then it was in the second amended complaint that it mentions a public parking lot.
There was a complaint that was dismissed, and then there was a second complaint filed. So,
but there's the complaint, for example, on right, July 19th, 2022. Yes. That doesn't say anything about parking, correct?
Correct.
Then there's an amended complaint, also doesn't say anything about parking. Then it's dismissed. They move to dismiss the amended complaint. Then it's dismissed. Then there's a second amended complaint. That's what you're referring to, yes, correct?
But part of the reason why there is an ordinance is to provide information to the public. Were the public used interested in weighing in on a certain matter, right? If revealing the purpose could be done in the context of negotiations, or in the complaint, how does the public weigh in on whether the public thinks that that's a legitimate purpose for the township?
On every ordinance, there's an opportunity for a public hearing, and the public has a right to comment and ask questions and right, be heard on every ordinance.
If the public purpose, the EV charging station and the parking lot, if that's not in the ordinance, how does the public weigh in or participate on that township decision as to whether that's a legitimate or appropriate public use for that township?
The ordinance is read on first reading, and the public has a right to be there on first reading, and then on second reading to go and be heard and speak about the ordinance. And if the public had questions about the use of the property or the proposed use of the property, the public would have the opportunity at that point to participate.
Suppose in this case, the public was opposed to an EV charging station in this location. They wouldn't have known under what you described for us the rules to be. They wouldn't have known that until the filing of the second amended complaint. How would they raise it then at the discussion preceding the ordinance?
Because they would be at the meeting and they would have the right to ask questions and speak on the ordinance.
So they would then have to go through a litany of things that they would oppose, regardless of knowing whether that's under consideration?
If they had shown up to the public hearing and said, to what use are you planning to put this property? And the borough council would have said, we intend to use this as a parking lot. Then they would have had the opportunity to be heard. And then
they have to show up and ask the question in order to find out.
No, there are other ways to get information from municipalities.
But the onus is on them and not on the town council, as you've described it.
Correct.
You stated earlier that in this case, the intended public use was on the record at the council meeting prior to the ordinance. Was that the case or no?
Yes, they did discuss the use of the property for parking.
But that, I'm sorry, I thought we went through this before. Mm-hmm. They discussed doesn't mean they made an announcement or they made a determination. Is that fair?
Correct. And we don't have the minutes of the meeting before us to.
Was anything else discussed as the public purpose for the property? Because you could understand if the chief's point is, mm-hmm, if they discussed 27 different things and one of them was EV parking and then 26 other uses included a drinking well, a new way to get onto the beach, who knows, many different options, then you could understand that that might be different than the entire meeting is discussing, or every part of the discussion about this property is about how they intend to use it for a public parking lot.
to my knowledge, there was nothing else discussed, and the well didn't arise until after.
But so, even if there were other potential public uses discussed, mm-hmm. anyone who was at that meeting would have had something that could have had something to say about it.
Correct.
Let me ask you about negotiations. And obviously, the purpose of the bona fide negotiations is to determine just compensation, highest and best use. And it's usually a matter of discussion of appraisals and so forth. But shouldn't the property owner be informed at that stage or prior to that stage as to what the proposed public use is? Hypothetically, not this case. Hypothetically, a property owner is thinking about, well, if, you know, someday I'd love to see this property turn into a public park for public recreation. And the property owner goes into a negotiation and finds out that the purpose of this taking is going to be for a public park, to inviting the people of the town and visitors to enjoy the open space. Isn't that important for the property owner to know? And conversely, if what the town is holding back is, we're going to turn this into a parking lot, shouldn't that also be something that the property owner should know before the bona fide negotiations commence?
The borough was contacted by counsel for the property owner before the second reading of the ordinance. And I believe Mr. Wegener included that letter in one of his filings, but the property owner was engaged, or their counsel was engaged and involved before negotiations began.
Was the property owner told before the negotiation stage what the public use would be? See what my question is? Isn't it something, if it's decided upon or quasi decided upon, how does that promote the purposes of the eminent domain law to be fair to all parties and to the public, to hold back that information before the negotiation begins?
The dialogue between the property owner and the borough from before the ordinance was adopted until the complaint was filed was only about the fair market value of the property and engaging in negotiations. There was never a question that was asked.
I get that. That's why I said hypothetically, because anything that this court writes in this case would affect other cases. Doesn't it promote a better negotiation if the cards are out on the table before the negotiation begins? Because it may be that the property owner might approach those negotiations differently depending on what their property is going to be turned into.
I think they would have responded in some way. And if the property owner had said...
But the negotiations actually are not about what the property owner thinks the public use should be, because the property owner ultimately has absolutely no say over the public use that the municipality has decided, correct?
That's correct.
The negotiations are all about, and I'm looking at the statute, just about the amount of compensation offered, the method for determining the compensation, and the specific property to be acquired. So there's nothing that they're negotiating over about whether the person whose property is going to be taken thinks that the public use is a good idea, correct?
Correct.
That's why I asked you, understanding that that's the purpose of those negotiations. Shouldn't the property owner be nonetheless informed as to what is happening? It might affect their negotiation position.
But if the value of the property is ultimately based on appraisal versus appraisal of highest and best use of the property, then what moment is that? Is the use of the property? The fact of the matter is that the use of the property was set forth in the complaint, and the condemnee has never challenged the public use to which the borough seeks to put the property.
The use for the property also has nothing to do with the amount of compensation offered or the fair market value, correct?
Correct.
So as you pointed out, the use of the property could be for far below whatever the fair market value is, and they still have to pay the property owner fair market value of the property, correct?
That's correct. In this case, the highest and best use as opined by both appraisers is residential housing. This is on the oceanfront, and anyone who would buy this property would want to use it for residential housing, except for the borough, which sees a need, as in his opening statement, appellant said that, you know, to provide a place for people to come to the beach. So that's what the borough is looking to do, to provide more parking, especially because there was no EV parking anywhere in the borough for commuters to come to spend a day on the beach, be able to spend the day and then leave.
Counselor, just to confirm, is there anything in the record before us that shows that this specific public use was discussed in April at the meeting?
No, I don't believe there are any minutes of this meeting that are in the record.
Other questions, anyone? Counselor, you still have a little time if you... you're actually beyond the time. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, not this time. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. We will take the matter under advisement.
Just
remind everyone that you need to reserve for rebuttal at the outset of argument, but please go ahead, Mr. Regner.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I'm not sure I heard everything the counsel said, but the court should be aware that the record is clear that prior counsel, before the ordinance was adopted, sent a letter to the mayor and council advising that they objected to the ordinance and pointed out that they had not asked the question, what is the purpose of the taking? That was asked in a letter, whether it's critical or not. There was a response actually by council the same day, which acknowledged receipt of the letter and then addressed, talked about going into discussions about negotiations for price and so forth, but never answered the question, that was specifically asked in that letter by prior counsel. That's in the that's in the record. Both of those are in the record. I assume after this, is there any question that the language of the complaint does not specify a specific public use?
I think we're at a good point to stop.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.